You're listening to WMFO. That's WMFO in Medford. Tufts Freeform, commercial-free, community-based radio. And you're about to hear a bit of that community bass with socialist alternative radio, talk and music from a working-class democratic socialist perspective. We're here every other Sunday for a couple hours of unique programming, far left, on purpose, partisan, pro-union, 110% pro-union. We're here to talk about socialism. We're here to talk about revolutionary socialism. We're here to talk about changing society from capitalism to an economy run by the people that actually do run the economy, working people. Our labor runs the economy. And we want to thank all of our regular listeners from around the globe due to the wonders of the internet. Again, our labor, the internet, yes. And thank you very much for writing into Socialist Alternative Radio on Facebook. And today it's myself hosting, co-hosting with
Diego.
Diego. Now, if you're a regular listener of the show, you often hear Diego call in. But Diego is actually here in the studio. So we welcome him again to his normal place at Mic 4. Welcome, Diego.
Thank you.
Now, Diego's gone through some, unfortunately, normal...
Still going through.
Stress and struggle.
May go through and continue to go through.
Due to the class struggle.
Under
the system. We're going to talk about that. Yep.
Dun, 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 dun.
You're talking about, like... The stuff you, some of you just might read about, others of you are living every day, the life of a worker in a precarious economy, that we're supposedly in a economic upturn.
I've been saying that since the 70s.
Well, you know, I'm referencing the 2007-2008 yeah. recession, and we're told now that it's in an upturn. But as even the corporate media admits from time to time, that upturn is not hitting the working class for the most part, and therefore you have all sorts of manifestations of that, all the poverty you see, the homelessness, etc. If you bother to get out of your bubble, you see
or
you
close
see the stress.
To be homeless.
Yeah, people living paycheck to paycheck, which I'm quite familiar with and Diego's quite familiar with. But also we have the political season, the electoral cycle, which has a manifestation, a lot of elements of that anxiety, that class anger, that dissatisfaction emerging in ways that the ruling class really would like to control better. They don't like Donald Trump. I don't like Donald Trump. We hate Donald Trump on this show. He's a racist moron. However, the fact that a lot of people, and by the way, it's not just working people, don't get into that cliche. There's a lot of well-educated Trump supporters. And by well-educated, I mean that can afford rich schools and so on. There's a lot of rich people that support Trump. Don't think it's just like people that don't know better somehow due to ignorance. It's people that very consciously support racist policies and anti-immigrant policies and pro-capitalist policies, which Trump is all about. But Trump throws in, what I'm getting at is he throws in that right-wing populist stuff about keeping jobs in the country and all that, and that's for some people enough to hear and say, "Oh, he's going to shake things up. He's going to get back at him."
Wasn't he part of the whole thing? You know, in the first place.
Yeah, of course.
His companies.
Absolutely.
Come on,
absolutely. Trump is
that's like a slap.
Trump
in my
is
face,
part and parcel of the system, but the people I'm talking about, some of the people that support him, it's a screw you vote, and you can understand that. I can understand that. I can understand being so mad. You're saying screw everyone. This guy's angry. I'm angry too. I can understand that to a point. But wake up. It's about, the person right next to you in the workplace is not the one screwing you over. You know, the person, the immigrant that you see lining up for day labor, which isn't happening as much as it used to, by the way, is not taking your job. They don't control hiring. Immigrants don't control hiring and firing for the most part, you know, a tiny percentage that become business people. Who controls hiring and firing in society? It's either the government, if for government jobs, run by elites that get appointed to positions of power, or the capitalists. They control hiring. And the bosses they hire, lower bosses
even
they hire.
The old liberal. I hate the liberal thing. Oh, we need the immigrants to come here for the cheap labor.
Yeah,
they don't do
they
it
do.
For human. They work human. The humanity. It's more like, well, let's exploit, exploit, exploit.
Well, that's the whole thing about immigration in this country. You notice it never gets solved, quote unquote, because there's a huge section of the capitalist class living off of exploiting cheap immigrant labor, using immigrant labor with the threat of deportation, especially so-called illegal immigrant labor, and the threat of deportation as a further stick against unionization and against any kind of organizing by workers. It doesn't always work. In fact, immigrants are some of the most strongest union supporters in the country right now and have more energy bringing the traditions of left-wing politics and so on from their country into this country. And that, by the way, is a good segue for International Workers Day coming up on May 1st. We're going to talk about that a little bit. But when should we talk about your recent when should we talk about your recent brush with the typical capitalist grind?
On a daily basis?
No, not the... Well, I don't mean grind, it's probably not to wear, but just getting chewed up and spit out and then finding another job that's less pay and all that.
Oh, first starting typical. With that, yeah.
This is typical. I mean, when should we talk about that? Right away? Or should we, let's get some announcements out of the way.
No, let's get some stuff out of the way. We can do it in like 15 minutes in between. Yeah.
We'll get some announcements
after
out of the way.
After a couple songs. We'll put on some Clash before I get into my... Let's do Magnificent Seven.
Well, actually, talk for a minute. And I
did you hear
grab.
About that? Magnificent Seven, a new movie. They remade it. Anyway.
Actually, keep talking. I got to go grab something.
Yeah. Well, Magnificent Seven, The Clash. What was the thing he was saying back in the 80s? If no other group mattered, this one.
The only band that matters.
The only band that matters, yeah. Represents The Clash. That's what the Clash I've been going through the last 3 months, you know, with whole checks.
Oh, that's about it.
Yeah. So, what's happening on May 1st as far as,
sorry about that. Yeah. I didn't have time before the show, the last show went a little over. I didn't have time to find the right songs and, I still don't have the right songs, to be honest. I must have pulled out some of my older CDs. Hold on. Here's The Clash, finally. Whoa, that was awkward. With the wrong... Doesn't have Magnificent Seven.
No, that's all right.
But,
anything
Washington
Clash.
Bullets will work. I think. Anyway, so we're here. You're listening to Socialist Alternative Radio, talking music from a working class democratic socialist perspective. Your co-hosts today are Jeff and Diego, and we are going to start talking about International Workers' Day. Now, what do you think the knowledge is up there, out there of our listeners of International Workers' Day? If you're a first-time listener, perhaps you're new to any kind of socialist politics or whatever, even union
stuff. I
know
knowledge in Cuba, a lot of people thought it was an international thing.
It is.
When I tell them, but it started here.
Right. How many Americans know that? Probably.
Well, some Cubans don't know that. 5%? They figured that's just
but how many Americans? 5% maybe? 3? Basically,
8%.
What Diego's talking
there's
about.
There's got to be, you still have people from, you know, mm-hmm. that have recollections from the 60s.
I hope so, yeah. Well, one of the things that we stand for in Socialist Alternative, by the way, is the creation of what we're calling now a party of the 99% or a workers' party. And what we mean by that, by the way, go to socialistalternative.org for more information. What we mean by that is a political party that will be independent of the Democrats, Republicans, independent of funding from the big corporations, and a party that hopefully will have progressive, you know, left-wing policies and programs. Or a basic program that will be anti-capitalist and so on. But, you know, it's unclear how that will emerge. And you know, it doesn't have to have a perfect program or something for us to support it because we just want to give people a political alternative to the left of the Democrats, basically, and move forward from there. The reason I mention that is that in a country like the United States, even though it's the most powerful capitalist country in the world, everyone knows the education system is screwed up. And the corporate media is the corporate media, you know? And therefore, most information that people get, and the education system isn't screwed up in the way the capitalists say it's screwed up, it's screwed up in the way the capitalists screw it up. The amount of information that gets out about reality, about the truth, is very minimal. And the truth of International Workers' Day is that it's an American holiday. It began around the struggle for the 8-hour day in the late 1800s. And it quickly was taken up by the International Socialist Movement to commemorate the struggle for the 8-hour day, but also to commemorate the struggles of workers around the world in terms of basic reforms, but also the fight for socialism. And it quickly became, in the late 1800s into the 1900s, an international holiday. And it was one that was celebrated quite extensively in the United States, at least in certain parts of the United States, like, for example, the 1930s, when the Communist Party was very strong in the United States, relatively speaking, getting up to 100,000 members, exerting a lot of influence. They had big May Day parades, big International Workers' Day parades in New York City. Fast forward to, the course, you went go through McCarthyism in the 50s. You go through the New Left, which wasn't very connected to the workers' movement in a lot of ways in the 60s and 70s, despite the gains made by the mass movements then, which were quite significant, getting ending the Vietnam War and so on. I'm not aware if International Workers' Day had a big presence in the 60s and 70s. I don't think it did. But starting around, like...
It did in, like, a lot of the Stalinist countries.
Of course, all the internationally, time. Yeah, internationally.
I'll talk to my friends from Bulgaria who remembers, oh, yeah. May 1st, oh, we had always put that little red thing on, you know, they remember that.
Well, I'm talking about, well, like, it's funny, you should mention Bulgaria, because I just read a thing about Romania where they polled youth, and the majority of the youth they polled were like the old system better. Now, that's not my opinion. That's not opinion of Social Alternative. The old system was Stalinism. It wasn't real socialism. But they liked the fact that they had there was less crime, and they had much less crime, and crime was practically non-existent. And they liked the fact they had health care and all this other stuff that now they struggle for, like
housing.
Yeah, exactly.
Education.
But what I was getting at was that in the United States, I think International Workers' Day largely disappeared. Labor Day became a holiday. And Labor Day has some legitimate roots, but it's mostly was used to be a counteract. What's the word I'm looking for? It was used in just
to counter the May Day.
To counter the May Day, exactly. To counter the May Day rallies, to be an alternative for the workers. And that turned into what? Picnics?
Picnics, you know? Barbecues.
And some parades.
The legions.
Some parades. I remember there was a parade in Boston up until the 80s, sometime in the 80s. But the parade would be...
The legions.
Would be like right wing, basically. It would be like patriotic, Army. Nationalistic. Yep. And May Day's internationalistic holiday. It's International Workers' Day, not National Workers' Day. So despite the fact that we tend to conceptualize it, the parades and struggles and protests and so on, in many countries, May Day, International Workers' Day is a time for focusing whatever the struggle is at that time. Focusing on that and going and fighting on that.
Labor is more—it's commercialized right off the bat.
What do you mean?
Picnics thing. Everything.
Oh, Labor Day. Yeah, Labor Day.
It's,
right.
It's more
Labor
of a commercialized, Day. You know, bourgeoisie.
Labor Day in the United States, right? It became a time
we'll make
for
money
for
off of it at the same time.
That I think out of the McCarthyist repression became more nationalistic, and out of the just American, you know, like you're getting into, Diego, the pressure. Of the bourgeois controlling that holiday, of big business controlling that holiday, became more of a consumer. Have
like
a day off.
Christmas.
Some of you have a day off, all right? Not everybody. And have a picnic. And that became Labor Day. Now, the reality is, and in a country with so few days off, that is a big deal, actually. You notice that you can create an entire market out of marketing like Labor Day or Memorial Day. If you notice in the retail sector, they get all excited, and the capitalists there, because it's so rare for Americans to have a day off. Even if not all of them get those days, more get them than not. That extra holiday, Martin Luther King Day for some people, that extra holiday results in a lot of money for the retail people. Because again, it's so rare to have a day off. It's like Black Friday. Where does Black Friday come from? That shopping day. Well, when people start to get that day off between Thanksgiving and the weekend, that is such a huge deal for most people. You know, wonder like, why do most people do their, you know, statistically? Why do most people do their Christmas shopping in the United States on Black Friday? Is it because of these deals or something? No, it's because they actually have a day off. Some of them, a lot of them, that they don't normally get off. It's so the vacation thing is so horrible in the United States, and most Americans just aren't aware of it. It's so horrible compared to the rest of the world, and so horrible for our lives, the lack of vacation time, that that we have to take. You get a rare day off. You're and I'm doing this a lot. You're running around crazily trying to spend time with your kids or something, and you end up just spending it on errands. You know, oh, I get to go grocery shopping and do my laundry for once. I get to clean up the house a little bit. Wow. That's, you know, when you meant the day to be hang out with your children or something, you know, it's really sad. International Workers' Day, we don't get that off as a holiday. Most parts of the world do. That's something we should fight for, actually, in the future. The labor movement should. But what I was leading up to is that at a certain point, there was a bit of a resurgence in International Workers' Day here in the United States, a little bit, in the 80s due to the immigrant rights movement. It was mainly centered around immigrants, at least here in Boston, and I believe that's the case in other cities.
Was that
cities.
The Salvadorian
No, even solidarity. Before even before 2000, was it 2006 that the big strike was for immigrants, the big immigrant strike was, I think, in 2006, where International Workers' Day, a lot of immigrants took the day off as a strike day, and that really crippled a lot of businesses. But that was not officially sanctioned by the labor movement, and of course, a lot of non-immigrant workers did not participate, which is the horrible weakness in that. And but it was a very interesting statement, and there were big International Workers' Days rallies that year. Do you remember that? Were you involved in that, Diego?
No, I got involved with Social Alternative in 2008.
Do you remember that at all?
But I do remember. Yeah,
yeah, that was a big day.
I was more with the RCP at the time, or not even really.
But do you remember the day?
I was actually looking for.
Do you remember the thing political. Happening though? Do you remember the actual event?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So 2006, I think it was. And but even before that,
right after Katrina, yeah, the year after,
But even before that, there was like a lot of smaller but still significant reemergence of International Workers' Day's commemorations and small marches. I remember being on a small march in Jamaica Plain years ago. Now, for the past 3 or 4 years, maybe a little more. I mean, Social Alternative started a Boston May Day coalition, or helped start a Boston May Day coalition back around 2006. And for a couple of years after that, we were having a rally in Boston, relatively small. Then that the sort of a more official part of the labor movement, so to speak, the sort of gatekeepers that make a living off of this stuff, in terms of the NGOs affiliated to labor. And so, like Jaws with Justice, they started up having one in East Boston. And that is happening this year as well. I thought I had the announcement for that, and I'm not sure I do. Let me just look for that for 1 second. Again, we're going to have page turning and dead air and stuff. But we're going to announce the main International Workers' Day rallies that we know of. And AFL-CIO, Mass AFL-CIO, don't fail me now. And
is
you
that
did
the one that
me.
Goes to East Boston all
they
the way to
me.
Everett, right?
Yeah. But what time does it start is what I'm looking for, and I thought I had that. So anyway, East Boston, check out Jobs with Justice's website, I guess would be a place to start, or the Mass AFL-CIO, although I just looked at something, they didn't have it listed. There is a May International Workers' Day celebration for people in Boston, centered in communities like Chelsea, East Boston, and Everett. Would have a lot of immigrants, but anyone is welcome to go, and they should go. And the union should be organizing for this. They're really not, but they on paper are endorsing it. Also, I know of a International Workers' Day rally in Worcester, Mass, where I do a lot of political activity for Social Alternative. And in Worcester, I do know the details, 4:30 p.m., May 2nd, the day after May Day, a Monday. Now, some of my comrades in Social Alternative are critical of that. That should be on May 1st, May Day, Sunday, a holiday. And I see that. That makes a lot of sense to me. But also makes sense to me to have it on a work day. You know, I could go either way on that. Because if you have it on a work day, it'll have more visibility.
Downtown, the boss.
Downtown Worcester on a Sunday, I got to tell you, as far as I've seen it, is dead. You know, so I'm on May 2nd, 4:30 p.m., which will be a Monday. There will be, I think, some people out and about that will see the rally. And there's a Worcester Community Labor Coalition. And it's kind of a funny story because this is only the second time they've put on International Workers' Day celebration. The year before that, nobody in Worcester did it except Social Alternative, another left group called the Progressive Labor Party, and a couple other people. And it was very, very small. But it put it on the map, sort of like, oh, this should be happening, you know? So it's happening now. I don't know if the coalition saw it or not, but or heard about it or not. But the point is that coincidentally, or because there should be something happening and they're kind of embarrassed or something, I don't know. But we do have this coalition on paper, a lot of unions, NGOs and stuff, and there will be a rally at City Hall, 4:30 p.m. We'll go over to the Common at some point. They're kind of putting it forward as sort of a cultural thing with all sorts of like cultural groups, lion dancers and high choruses and medicine singers and so on. That's all right. That's fine. But then they say speakers will speak on topics including... Now, why do I say that's fine? I'm not giving permission. No, I'm not giving permission or something. I'm saying the real purpose of International Workers' Day is to celebrate the history of socialism, the power of workers, and the need for socialism in the future, international socialism.
And address the issues.
And, yeah, address issues that are happening. Now, they do say that speakers will speak on topics including transparency with city tax breaks, something which in Worcester is called TIFS. That's the acronym. Racial and gender justice, immigrant rights, training, education, climate, environmental justice, jobs not just mass incarceration. Socialist Alternative will be there talking about all that stuff, but in the context of how do we actually make fundamental change around those things, get rid of a lot of those problems, not just
talk
about
them.
Yeah, not just patch them up for a second. Like, for example, on the TIFFS thing, there's a bit of a disagreement about that's related to the $15 minimum wage struggle that we still don't have in Massachusetts or any city in Massachusetts. We still don't have a $15 minimum wage. And so in Worcester, that's taking the form of having this TIFFS thing where for certain city jobs, you have to hire Worcester residents and then pay them. And the goal is to get them paid $15 an hour. And that's fine, but the goal should be obviously citywide $15 an hour, and that's what Social Alternative is fighting for. I believe SEIU, the Service Employees International Union, is in favor of that as well. So we'll be there talking about that, and we'll have information about socialism and the history of May Day, International Workers' Day, and so on. Also in Providence, Rhode Island, there's going to be 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. on Sunday, May Day, at Conian Junior Memorial Park, C-O-N-I-A-N, Conian Junior Memorial Park, I don't know how to pronounce it, 200 Messer Street, Providence, Rhode Island. That's where the park is. 200 Messer Street, M-E-S-S-E-R, 02909, zip code if you're looking for, you want to look that up on something. Conian Junior Memorial Park, 200 Messer Street, Providence, May 1st, 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. This is hosted by the Providence IWW. And if you're familiar with the IWW, that was a big union at one point. And now it's not. I don't mean to criticize them, but it's, you know, it's basically kind of a political thing rather than a union. And by political, I mean all unions are political. What do I mean by that? I mean it's kind of mostly anarchist.
They dropped their mandate that they had
in the early 1900s. They had some success in organizing. But
they were the ones with one big union.
Yes, exactly. The Wobblies. Yep, and they led the Bread and Roses strike, which was huge.
John Reed came out of that?
I think Reed was probably in the Wobblies. I'm not 100% sure. But the history of the Wobblies is that they, because of the anarchist influence they in that organization, they tended to not leave much behind when they organized the place, not much organization. But they were a good alternative to the more conservative AFL at the time. There was no CIO yet. And they would organize anybody or try to organize anybody. So they got into places and organized and did fights like the free speech fight they did and so on. They were very brave. They were repressed and hassled and horribly shot at and murdered and killed in certain places. And anyway, that was a whole period in U.S. history where the labor movement was just getting going. And as soon as the Russian Revolution happened and the Socialist Party started to grow, people saw also before that, the Socialist Party growing and the Russian Revolution, people saw sort of an alternative to the IWW, especially the new Communist Party in the 1920s before Stalinism got a hold of it totally. There was an influx of IWW leaders into the Communist Party, and the IWW had hit a wall of repression, a combination of repression and a combination of just not being able to organize permanent or semi-permanent
union structures. And they started losing members.
And so the struggle in the 20s took the form of more of trying to make the AFL unions more militant. There was severe repression against the labor movement in the 1920s and the 1930s. The explosion of the CIO blew everything out of the water, and the IWW just ceased to exist for the most part. I don't know when it was sort of in name, rehabilitated or whatever, brought back. But now it's sort of like, I think they represent some smaller things here and there. But it's mostly like sort of an anarchist-influenced political movement. So that's my way of saying, not so sure it's going to be a big deal, but you should go anyway, May 1st. Because they're the ones that are stepping up and putting it on. So Providence IWW, Sunday, May 1st, 3 p.m. to 5 p.m., Conian Junior Memorial Park in Providence. And then we have the East Boston Everett-Chelsea demo, which we don't have all the details about. What time do you think those start? Probably late in the afternoon, right?
That starts around, late afternoon. I think that we meet in Government Center, I remember.
This is different, though. No? This is going to be meeting, I think,
okay,
in East Boston.
Okay, so probably be in Maverick Station.
Yeah,
just
probably.
Be there, maybe 11. You can't miss it. You'll see red flags.
I think maybe 4, don't you? Maybe later, no? Because people aren't going to have the day off.
That's weird. Yeah.
I don't know. Well, I don't know. We just, I looked, it's not my fault, so, totally. I looked at this thing. I printed out from the Mass AFL-CIO, and for some reason they don't They don't advertise the East Boston one at all.
But if it's an all day thing, it's definitely be like around midday. It's a whole march. It's
really? You think it'll be all day? Okay.
Yeah, it goes all the way to Everett. You go through Chelsea, and then you continue into where the Market Basket and Everett and Chelsea.
Where do they end
into,
up? Where do they end up usually?
Right off of Broadway and Ferry Street and that big park over by Everett.
Okay.
Yeah. Everybody meets at that rally point.
Well, like I said, check out Jaws with Justice website. Check out the AFL-CIO website. Maybe they'll have something about it. That's the Boston one. And in Worcester, May 2nd, Good Jobs, Workers' Rights, 4:30 p.m., City Hall, International Workers' Day Celebration.
That's the march I told you one year. This cop comes up to me. They were doing bets.
Uh-oh.
I have my red flag. Uh-oh. He comes up to me. Very friendly. Not like, you know, I'm going to harass you. Who are you?
Okay, all right.
He goes, we were just wondering, what's that red flag represent? I just turned around and said, I'm a socialist. And he goes back to his buddy. He got, you owe me.
Well, you know, that's...
I was like, what's going on?
That's a great story, but what do you think would happen today? I mean, the word socialism's out there a lot more than it was.
What do you mean, like favorably or like...
Favorably, yeah. I mean, some
it was there. It was favorably back then too. I'm talking about 2012. I mean,
oh, okay. All right. Well, some people... That's a great point. That's a great point. Some people...
I think it's after 2010, the word socialism started getting more. After 2008,
well,
actually.
After Occupy, maybe, huh?
Yeah,
and Occupy. Talking about inequality and all that?
Definitely.
Yeah. I mean, you basically have, like, some people say, for example, Bernie Sanders is creating, you know, they're somehow initiating more favorable attitudes towards socialism. I see why people think that. Because he hasn't, to his credit, he hasn't backed away from the term in an obvious way. Like, if someone challenges him on it, he'll sort of redefine it to be not socialism, but at least he doesn't say it's a bad word or anything, and he'll talk about Scandinavian socialism, which doesn't exist in the way he
talks about China.
It.
The communist state in China. I'm like, all right, guy, you're all over the map now.
Yeah, now he's all over the map on what socialism really is, but the point is he doesn't back off. He doesn't say it's a bad thing. It's arguable. We could have this debate, and I would probably agree with you. He's doing some harm to it. Like, he called Chavez a tin pot communist dictator, something like that, in one interview. But the vast majority of interviews is someone says to him, hey, it's usually a corporate media person, so you're a socialist? What's that about? Or something like that, you know? He'll usually give an answer that makes it sound like a positive thing, even if it's inaccurate in what it really is. For example, he has said publicly... and in a speech where he defined his version of socialism, that he's not in favor of public ownership or nationalizations of corporations. And that's an essential part of not just socialism, but any kind of really progressive...
Well, planned economy,
even under capitalism. Look, they took over GM and the big banks in the 2007-2008 recession. Now, not in a way that we would do it, but the government did it. You know, Obama administration did it. It's not unheard of at all. He's backed off from that totally, or not backed off. He just doesn't believe in it. For a real socialist believes that's a very important tool for bringing about democratic socialism, ultimately, for bringing about socialism. You have to be able to take under public ownership what should already be under public ownership, these vast social enterprises that are called corporations. But it's actually, when you break them down, it's people, vast numbers of people doing the work and creating the value and the wealth, not the big bosses that control the mechanisms of that. So, despite Sanders's like confusion or deliberate obfuscation or whatever the word would be of socialism, he doesn't say it's a bad thing or try to back off from it in a weird way.
But I'll tell you why I won't vote for him, and I'm independent right after the end.
I won't either vote for
him. It's because he didn't support in the 90s. We could have had a Labor Party if he didn't back off from that.
He didn't have anything to do with that, unfortunately. Nothing.
So he didn't do anything.
That's the secret history of Sanders is that a lot of people don't know is he's been really, despite the independent label, he's been really tight with the Democrats since the early 90s. So when the Labor Party emerged, he had nothing to do with it. And he was just into making deals with the Democrats. He voted with the Democrats by the admission of like other Democrats, like that guy that ran, what's his name, Hartman or something? I'm forgetting his name. The Democrat, the other guy from Vermont that ran in 2004, I think. And
Howard Dean.
Howard Dean, exactly. Thank you.
Rawr,
yeah, exactly. There you go. So Howard Dean, who got unfairly treated over a little little scream about who's a jerk, by the way. A real,
well, Donald
a real,
Trump does, I mean, Jesus. I mean,
well, Howard Dean.
See what they did, how they did him, right?
Wait, before you get
but
into Trump.
But Trump can do all this blip, blip,
right, right. And a little
pucker of his.
But it's a different time. It's a different time. That's what I started into before. We didn't finish that thought, but let's finish this one. So Sanders, despite all his, like, misrepresentation of socialism, doesn't shrug off the label in an obvious way. And he talks about things he thinks are positive in relation to that label. I don't mean to sound confusing, but it is a little confusing because he's not really a socialist. But so some people say Sanders is really building somehow
a consciousness revolution
for socialism. Yeah, a political revolution. All that. I disagree completely with that. I think Sanders is riding a wave, kind of something you said that reminded me of this. He's riding a wave that already started about that was positive towards socialism. We used to, on this show even, quote polls from Pew Research and other big polling companies.
The Gallo.
Saying, what's your attitude? The general question would be, what is your attitude towards socialism? They would track it year by year by year, starting around after Occupy. And it kept getting more and more favorable to the point where the last quote I did on this show, I don't know if it's still true or not, you had an absolute majority of people of color, an absolute majority of youth, and I forget how youth was defined, 18 to 25, I believe, were in favor of socialism. And you had high percentages, like in the 40 percentiles for population as a whole in favor of socialism. Now, again, they could be like Sanders, a lot of those people, and be defining socialism as something weird. And I know on Facebook I get a lot of...
Do you know the percentage of people that have this, what do they call it, like a not a good view of capitalism?
No, that
I
wasn't.
I think it's
that wasn't
40%.
Yeah, well, that
no, no, no,
that
60%.
Wasn't the,
so yeah. It's 60%. So the
I don't know that
the
yeah.
anger is growing. You
good,
know,
I agree.
Just a
I agree.
Negative.
Yeah. Yep. Now this poll that I'm referring to is just about socialism. So you're talking about a different one. Yeah.
Now we're going to the other side. Yeah. Okay. What
Nancy,
is the unfavorable?
You, what do you think about capitalism?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very unfavorable.
Yeah, I would have to
it's,
put
it when
capitalism is evil. Is there a category for that somewhere? I don't mean to make it moralistic. It's an unconscious robotic evil, let's call it that, for the most part. But anyway, so, you know, just the point is that basically Sanders isn't initiating creating a socialist movement of any sort or even helping consciousness in that direction. In my opinion, I think he's hampering it in some cases, but he's certainly riding a wave of more positive attitudes towards socialism. You have a whole generation that's growing up with no Cold War propaganda. I grew up with that stuff every day. And yeah, that could be overcome, you know, especially with conditions. You know, I heard anti-socialist, anti-communist rhetoric every day in my life, probably growing up as a kid. And I would, because I would read the papers every day. And I became a socialist, a revolutionary socialist, you know, despite that, based
well,
on
conditions
other factors.
Makes us, you know.
Conditions.
If you were to tell me, why am I a socialist? What I went through
ideas.
For the last 3 months, is that saying enough?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But also with me, it was running into ideas that made sense out of the conditions I was in. If I had never run into the ideas, of course, I wouldn't have been a socialist. And unfortunately, in America, as we've talked about on the show before, it's kind of accidental how you run into these ideas because, we have no mass workers' party. We have no socialist party, no communist party, no labor party, like all these other countries do. So even if you're in a country where that kind of party has sold out by now, there's still its history is out there, you know? Like, say you're in Britain and you're in school and you learn that at one point the British labor movement created a socialist program and then put out a party called the Labour Party.
Put out a healthcare system
called
NSA.
Completely, yeah, the National Healthcare System, completely in to fight conservatives and liberals, just like here, you know, Republicans, Democrats, you know, same dynamic. But there, they started a new party to fight that. Now, that Labour Party in the 90s, under people like Blair and Kinnock and so on in Britain, completely tried to become like the Democratic Party of the United States with some success, but not total success. And it's still different than a Democratic Party. Still has a membership base, still has union affiliations, formal union affiliations, and so on. Here, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party are just electoral machines, totally controlled by big business.
Yeah, and the company I used to work for, Whole Checks, has a couple of stores there, and they're ready to shut down.
We can say their name now, right?
Can't yeah,
we say
I don't
now?
Care.
Whole Foods.
Whole Checks.
Whole Foods. We kept away from that. If you're a regular listener to the show, you'll know that Diego would call in and complain about work, and we would have allude to the place without saying the name. Now we're free to say the name, Whole Foods.
The chains got cut.
So what are you talking about, though? They're closing stores?
Well, they got 2 to 3 in London, in England.
Ah,
and,
okay, yeah. Ooh. They didn't work
You know
well.
Where I'm going with this, right?
They got unionized right away. Good.
It's the law. So they went in and thinking, no, we're an open door policy company. No, they reined in. So they're thinking of closing one because of the workers. They can't get the, you know, what they get over on us. Oh, you point systems and da, da, da. Yep. They started going with the point system. They just went right to their rep, their low, whatever it is, their union.
Yep.
Stop right away or the state will shut you down. Or we will boy or whatever, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yep, yep. That's interesting. I didn't know about that. That is really good, actually. Speaking of workers,
so they're going, oh, we can't get things done here. You know, this is not, this is different. It's a different. Yep. Why do you even come here? Well, if you go and they're thinking of going to Europe, I was like, good luck, because that's.
Yep. Hey, before we move on, I want to say one more thing about International Workers' Day, because in case you're totally new to the idea and you're listening for the first time, I just want to. I'm going to quote from a leaflet here that we were using in Worcester for International Workers' Day. International Workers' Day, or May Day, is a day for working people to celebrate our history and power to improve our lives and to create a decent future for our families and for youth. Our labor as workers creates all wealth, and society could not function without us. That's what paycheck doesn't understand, whole paychecks, right? They make it seem like it's the guy, right?
It's everywhere, too. It's where I work now.
Of course. But it's the big
clover,
CEO.
Clover, it's a clover. I call it a clover. It just clovers you. You know, it's not clover, it's clover. I'm sorry. I'll say it. I don't care.
International Workers' Day, just in the further quote for one second. International Workers' Day is a day to remind ourselves of our power as a class, to show active solidarity with union struggles like the strike by Verizon workers, which we're going to get into hopefully in a minute, and also the fight for a $15 minimum wage, and to renew labor's need to educate, agitate, and organize. In a time of low union density, high cost of living, and stagnant wages, and income inequality on the rise, it has never been more important to rebuild a fighting labor movement. Every major gain for workers has been through struggles around demands to improve our lives, but most real victories are won when the labor movement has a vision for a democratic socialist world, a world without the relentless corporate greed and destruction of the environment, which are inevitable byproducts of capitalism. I don't know why I'm not talking well today. A great example of fighting and winning an immediate demand while at the same time organizing for fundamental change can be seen in the recent election and re-election of Shama Sawant to the Seattle, Washington City Council. Shama, a member of Socialist Alternative, campaigned as an open socialist and used the election campaigns and her first term in office to lead fights for a $15 minimum wage, rent control, housing rights, and giving strong concrete support to many labor and environmental struggles. The result of this socialist-infused organizing was crucial in winning in Seattle the first $50 minimum wage law in the country. Does that sentence make sense? The result of the socialist-infused organizing was winning in Seattle. I don't know. Anyway. Here in Worcester, Social Alternative has been organizing and fighting for the following issues, among others: $15 minimum wage for all workers in Worcester, for a $15 minimum wage for all workers and student workers at Clark University, known as student workers added there, including demanding Clark University reestablish need-blind admission and roll back tuition fees to 2014 levels, organize a citywide college coalition in Worcester to fight for affordable education against cuts in education, anti-racism for an elected civilian oversight board over police conduct with power to take abusive police off the streets. Also reverse the persecution and destruction of Mosaic. Mosaic was this sort of NGO that a lot of black organizations, including anti-racist organizations, used this building for meetings and stuff. And the city just used some sort of, you know, bureaucratic way to shut it down, you know. Yeah, it's kind of very racist. The city council in Worcester is known for like racist behavior and stuff. Elections for a new political party in Worcester for the 99%. Stop wasting our union dues money and our organizing energy on the corporate dominated Democrats and Republicans. So anyway, by the way, if you're out there in that part of Massachusetts, go to write to WorcesterSA@gmail.com, phone 769-232-9307. And again, go to socialistalternative.org for addresses and phone numbers of Socialist Alternative here in the Boston area. So anyway, that's some stuff about International Workers' Day. By the way, here at Tufts University, which this radio station emanates from, there was a rally, I believe, Friday. And if I have the chronology wrong, please forgive me. 50 students in the Tufts Labor Coalition staged a silent protest at the hashtag Jumbo Days welcome address for hashtag Tufts 2020 students. Students held banners with messages about the poor treatment of workers at Tufts, a reality that President Monaco and other administrators refused to acknowledge. Quote, we intended to stand silently for President Monaco's scheduled speech. However, upon arrival, an admissions officer informed us that President Anthony Monaco would no longer be speaking. President Monaco's decision to avoid confrontation mirrors the broader administration's refusal to engage with students and workers. Now, what is the topic there, or the problem there was, I think, poor treatment of workers was, for example, Tufts janitors, ongoing struggles at Tufts here. Tufts janitors preparing to enter contract renegotiations with hopes of ensuring better working conditions. And Tufts saying they have nothing to do with it. They're subcontracted. Big lie.
These managerial people have like these weird names, like Murloc, Malo, Hash It, you know, like.
The hashtag thing is like the, you know, that stuff that, you know, that I don't do that, but the, you know what it is, the, you know. I'm failing at words today.
It's like that, my last
tweeting,
name.
Tweeting, all that stuff. Twitter.
They don't even all tweet right. No more. I was on Facebook. It's.
I don't Twitter, but
I don't
anyway,
know what
tweet.
Else they do now.
Anyway, Tufts Labor Coalition is also working with the Massachusetts Building Trades Council and asking Tufts administration to hire union-only labor for large construction projects. You notice if you drive around Tufts here in Medford, Somerville, you see tons of construction. Drive around Alston and Harvard, tons of construction.
Well, you got to park all the way down there when you used to park here.
Universities have huge... Huge. They're basically endowment hoarding.
Harvard just expanded into Alston, I've noticed.
They're not taxed. Yep. That's been going on for a few years now, and it's a huge expansion. Really huge. Anyway, so go to Facebook. That's going to be too much to read out. I don't know what you should contact. Tufts Labor Coalition, maybe. Try that on Facebook. The janitors had a rally on Friday. Now, this what's really kind of both poignant and... in a way, it's good that people are still struggling, but you know, this janitor struggle started back in the 1990s, where they had a long-term union here representing janitorial workers, some of whom worked here for decades, and they had a good, fairly good union, fairly good contracts, including and some very interesting benefits, including being able to send their children to Tufts for free, along with a lot of other attacks on unions in the 90s. Tufts decided to join the race to the bottom. The Tufts administration, they busted the union.
I heard
they
Harvard used to union. Do that too.
Of course, yeah. Harvard in my time
if it
there
still does. I have.
Harvard, they try. Harvard has broken in my time there, at least one or two security unions and another union. I can't remember the type of workers it was, and they do outsourcing. They do subcontracting, and so the unions that represent, like, for example, the security guards, service employees, or national union, they have to go out and organize every little subcontractor firm that pops up. And I'm not sure how successful that is. I think it's pretty successful, but there's gaps. So I think at Harvard, you could have non-union workers in one area and unionized ones in another one, which is exactly what Harvard wanted, to the goal of no unions at all. And you have, but then you have the hotel workers union, representing dining hall workers, and the union I'm in, AFSCME, Harvard U of Clerical and Technical Workers, representing workers that are not subcontractors. We were direct employees of Harvard, and Harvard hates that. And for example, in my work, the work I do is being outsourced a lot now. And so they're trying to whittle away at the unions that exist with the impermanent so-called workers through layoffs and outsourcing and all sorts of other nasty things. So Tufts did this in the late 90s to the janitors, and Social Alternative was very involved in that struggle. I have very clear memories of marching around here and yelling at the top of my lungs, and it was a complicated situation in a way, because when you hear about a company, a big corporation like Tufts going after a union, the lines are pretty clear, right? Problem with this is that there are labor leaders in this country that are so pro-business. They don't understand they're supposed to be anti-capitalist and against big business. They're so pro-business, they see their union as a business. And at that time, SEIU was just being reformed on a national level, in some ways reformed. It never really got totally reformed. And the old business unionist leadership was in power still in the 90s here in Boston. So in other words, the local that represented janitorial workers around Greater Boston was an SEIU local run by a guy named Eddie Sullivan, who was a complete scumbag. And if he was here, I'd punch him in the face right now. And what this guy did was he collaborated with the Tufts administration behind the backs of the workers here and said, go ahead and get rid of all those workers. We'll bring in new workers. And they won't be called scabs, and they won't be called anything except they're part of the local, and they can come and work here. So it was kind of a subcontracting within the union local. So you just fire all these people, we won't fight it, and you'll hire all these other people. And they had a...
That's what Shaw, I told you that Stop and Shop. Yeah. Remember they were going through that strike? Yeah. And I applied earlier, prior to me knowledge of them being strike. Yeah. And they called me up. They said, are you still interested in the job? I said, no, I'm not.
Yeah, good. Well, this was worked out.
You know how much they were paying? $16.66.
Yeah, they always raise it when there's a strike. Yep.
That 16666. I said, no. I said, you're jinxing me.
That's
right.
The devil's
I'm
wage.
A scab and you got the 666 on top
That's
of that.
That's the devil's wage, yeah. So here at Tufts, they and I hope someone from the Tufts Labor Coalition is listening to this because there's a long history of this struggle. So Tufts played a horrible, evil role, of course, but they did it by buying off this union leader. And they probably didn't have to do that much to buy him off because he was already a sellout, Eddie Sullivan. And he went along, I had this vivid memory of in one of these buildings over here, they had a stooge election, like a fake election, where they had to vote on a new contract with all these workers that didn't really work here. And they just bust them in, literally. We saw the buses come in. We're yelling. We're doing stuff. But the workers alone here, without support from a larger union, without much support from the labor movement, because union leaders like to stick together, unfortunately, even when they shouldn't. So they're afraid to go in and you know, talk about other unions and stuff when they should. You know, if I was a labor leader, I'd say, screw, you know, if you're a business unionist, you're going to be my enemy, you know. So,
and there'll be a split within that, the leadership.
There'll always be a split. Every revolution is a civil war. People have to understand that. You never have complete unity for
anything. But how can you have a split if everybody stick together? Well, I'm going to go with him even though morally I don't agree with it.
I'll tell you what happened. You're right. I basically agree with that. But here in this case, there was a comeuppance finally. That's a funny word to use, but there was a sort of change. This was so horrible what they did, busing people in, having a fake election with the bosses, with the Tufts bosses, going, you know, collaborating and running the show. Tufts cops out there stopping us from going in and breaking up the fun. And basically, they accepted a contract that included like layoffs and all this horrible stuff. And then they outsourced soon after that. So that's there's roots of this current, unfortunately, this current struggle goes back 20 years. And the janitors just keep getting really hurt, really badly, reorganized, hurt, reorganized. And they never make it back up to the standards of the 90s. They haven't yet. So basically what happened was this guy, Eddie Sullivan, this exposed him even more. Like, he was already, like, known as a business unionist and as really a rotten leader. But this exposed him a lot. And it was also a time when this guy, Andy Stern, had come in as the top of SEIU, and he turned into a real jerk. But at that time, it was kind of a popular reform movement in SEIU. So what they did was they took this guy's local, Eddie Sullivan's local, and there were some SEIU people involved in protesting, like from another local, from a progressive local, SEIU 285, they were protesting. So not all labor leaders stuck with this Eddie Sullivan guy, including in SEIU. There was a big fight opened up in SEIU, and at that time, it was good, actually, of course, that the reformers won. The reformers didn't turn into such great reformers, but that's another story. And Sullivan's local was put under trusteeship within the SEIU. And Sullivan, I don't know if he was actually ever kicked out, but he, at the same time, was getting arrested for DUI quite a bit, for drunk driving. And he, I don't know, he might have done some jail time, I'm not sure. So he might have left on his own.
How does he become a member? I mean, a leader, if he got like a record of...
He used that big salary to get his scotch and whatever on. So he, I don't remember if he left on his own or got expelled from the union or whatever, but one day... Guess where he showed up? This is great. This is typical. He showed up at a big negotiation on management side. One day, Eddie Sullivan went from, blustery, old school, good old boy, union leader, who I'm sure a lot of union leaders thought was the epitome of a union leader, good union leader. Next, and in reality, he was scum. Next day, he's on management side. I saw that happen in one of the unions I used to be in, the United Electrical Workers. There was some guy out in middle of Massachusetts, Central Mass. I'm calling Central, it Mid Mass, which no one calls it that. Central Mass. This guy, one day he's with a local union, the United Electrical Workers, And the next day he's working for management, you know? And that's the thing about the labor leaders in this country that it took me a long time to understand. They're not, they're so corrupt, a lot of them, and so don't understand capitalism, and so on the wrong side ideologically, even if they represent workers, that they are willing to basically retire into management or retire into a union that no longer exists. A lot of unions have been merged, you know?
And they become every man for themselves.
And yeah, totally. They're willing to like get them and their cronies to retire. They don't care what happens to the labor movement after that. They really don't.
So generations after that.
A lot of workers now are facing, they have to fight the bosses. I've had to fight this a lot in my local. They have to fight conservative, obviously, bosses and corporations like Harvard, the endowment hoarder of the millennia, Harvard University.
Millennials. They're older than the United States.
They're not even
and
taxed.
Slavery,
they're not
I
even
think.
Taxed. That's where they got their first endowments from slave money.
Yeah.
You know, like at Harvard, there's a thing, there's a sit-in at the law school, which is good, against some law school guy that got his money from slavery. They should sit in, the whole university should be shut down. Harvard should be wiped off the freaking map, not in terms of the
buildings.
No, that's what I was going to say. Not the resources, but the whole idea of Harvard as a great thing. Wipe it off the map. That's where the ruling class gets its training or a section of it. That's based on slave money and slavery originally. Well, we don't need Harvard. It's like when Trump says, make America great again. When was it great? It was never great. The people there's been some wonderful struggles. It's a great country in terms of the nature of it. It's a beautiful
what's
country.
Left of it, yeah.
Yeah, what's left of it. I mean, no, it's truly, I mean, America's freaking amazing as far as I'm concerned. In terms of the nature, you know, like this continent, this massive land and the oceans is truly, truly beautiful.
Resources.
It's being ruined, of course, being destroyed by capitalism, but it's truly beautiful. That plus the people struggling, I love that, but the rest of it, all the myth, all the big businesses, Harvard University, do I get a little twinge inside when I think of Harvard University? I get a twinge. I get Harper.
Get a real anger.
I get like anger, yeah.
Don't have a stroll now.
I'm trying to keep the blood pressure down. But anyway, the point of the story was that, getting back to this guy, Eddie Sullivan, he then, you know, disappeared into management ranks or whatever. And you know, I run into these old labor guys and I just want to say to them, I say, you know, where are you? Why are you wearing that suit? And why are you up there making a speech like you know something? You know nothing. You've destroyed the labor movement. You've brought us down to 6% private sector unionization, and you're going to lecture somebody about how to be a union leader? You're nothing. Retire. Resign. Let somebody else give it a try. Hand it over to Socialist Alternative. We'll give it a shot. You know? And it won't be on your salary. Shama is a city councilor. Shama Swan is a city councilor in Seattle, refusing to serve at the $120,000 salary that the Seattle city councilors get. We're only serving on a worker salary. She only gets like $40,000, the average salary of workers in Seattle. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, Tufts Labor Coalition, check them out. I don't know really. I didn't get from this article how to check them out, but try Tufts Labor Coalition on Facebook. They're helping the janitors, and it sounds like the building trades workers here at Tufts. Which
do
is
they also
good
have
thing.
The dining services here?
I don't know. That's a great question. I don't know if the dining halls here are, they're probably subcontracted to Sodexo or some evil crap. I don't know if that's true. I don't know if they're organized. I have a feeling they're not. I hope I'm wrong. I hope they are. I can say with certainty, unfortunately, that the clerical workers are not organized. And that's a shame. That's horrible. My union leadership, who are really, really bad pro-capitalist union leaders, they tried to organize here twice. And they claim to be great organizers. And they keep losing all over the place. They still claim to be great organizers. And they lost. They couldn't even get a vote. It was horrible. I know someone used to work at the radio station that worked at Tufts, and he was like, yeah, you know, they came in to organize, and I was all excited. I offered my help, and they never got back to me. They had it. They have this really weird organizing model where they want people that they can turn into complete robots that are there, that they can confuse into thinking that they're their friends. Everyone's a friend of the union leader. So they can pull personal psychological things to get people to do things, and they get them to do the wrong things,
like leafleting, and
they get them to do nothing. They get them to sit to define the union as partnership with management, to not go out and leave it, to not do anything. That's the problem. I've told you about this before. It's, you know, my Harvard Clerical and Technical Workers Union is a dead union. It's got nothing. It's almost a company union. It's just
they're sterilized.
A hair
the
away from a company
they're
union.
They're sterilized. So just keep it
they're
at
there,
check.
They're there to make money off it, and they're there to create an amalgamation in their mind and of two incompatible ideologies, unionism, which they don't understand, and capitalism, which they don't understand. And they just want to, like, for example, there's all these unions that endorse progressive things. My union doesn't endorse that stuff. And if they do endorse Democrats, they don't tell the members. There's no union meetings. There are no real union meetings where you vote and set policies and stuff. Speaking of that 6% organized, the Verizon workers are on strike, which a lot of our listeners hopefully have heard of. Oh, before we get into that, I have to give the station identification. We are WMFO Medford. That's WMFO in Medford. And we also like to call ourselves Tufts Educational Radio and also Tufts Free Form Radio. And I like to add we're commercial free and we also have a community base. So it's Tufts Free Form, commercial free, community based radio. And part of that community base is this show, Socialist Alternative Radio. Been on the air for a long time now, at least 10 years, maybe 15. I lose track. And today's.
Well, it's going on 10.
Today.
2007, right?
Or 6.
It's 10.
10, yep. So we are here with myself, Jeff, and Diego as co-host. Before we get into the latest outrage, we're going to talk about that you've suffered through. We're going to talk about Verizon. Oh, and by the way, all that complaining I was doing about my unionership, I just got, I'm suffering from one of the worst union contracts ever signed in my local, where they gave to this extremely, incredibly wealthy Harvard University that just got brought in $8 billion in a fundraiser and has $37 billion plus in endowment and so on and all sorts of other income. They just negotiated without any struggle against it, any visible struggle or, you know, no leafleting, no protesting. They accepted the leadership accepted and the membership voted for it. They were so happy. They got like 90% of the members or more of those that voted. A lot of people didn't vote, unfortunately, but in the union vote on the contract, they got so many people to vote for it. It was a overwhelming landslide of those that voted, and which was a minority, but anyway. And I'm like, yeah, because people are desperate for raises. We didn't have a raise for almost 2 years. So there's these little raises in the contracts. People are desperate for that. I'm desperate for it too, but I voted no. Because there are cuts, concessions to rich Harvard on medical care. Harvard can give us all free medical care. Instead, we're going to be paying more for medical care. And I have
correct.
A family.
So mathematically, I'm going to give you a raise, but I'm going to take out of your...
With concessions on health.
So really,
insurance.
I'm not giving you a raise. It's right. Kind of like I'm cutting, yeah, I'll right. Give you this,
exactly.
But I'm taking this.
Exactly. And my unionership is the cynical creeps that they are. They call that, they have a word for it. They call it repackaging. And they like it. They like it. They want to make it seem like you got a good contract.
That's like where I worked. Separated.
Yeah. They brainwash everyone saying
it's fired. You fired me. With no avail. I said, I need this job. You still fired me. No, you've been separated.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, or you quit.
Yeah.
I was like, no, I didn't because it wasn't a verbal thing. But anyway, go continue with your.
No, that's fine. That's fine.